You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Daily Nationalist. Today is March 6, 2024. And, I just realized sometimes I refer to the Orthodox Nationalist when I'm doing the Daily Nationalist. Someone had just mentioned that to me. But it is a very dreary day here around Pittsburgh. And speaking of dreary, there is nothing more dreary than what's happening today in Ukraine, and for the last roughly 2 years. Now, normally how we do the Daily Nationalist here, there's a few articles that I cull from various sources, either positively or negatively, and we discuss them at length. And the first one was written on leap year of this year, Ahmed Adel, and he is able to bring evidence to bear on what I've been saying since day one. In fact, everything you're going to read here or hear here are things that I've said from day one. And it's the worst kept secret. And that's, it's been a NATO-Russia war from the start. Now, I said NATO or the U.S. had declared war on Russia in 2004. If you go back to the older shows in the very beginning, you'll hear it. A symbolic declaration of war, but one, a declaration nonetheless. It's true that Germany and France have sent special forces to Ukraine dealing with intelligence and things like target control. And the German Chancellor, Scholz, I think accidentally made this clear. But the point was that Germany's not going to send the Taurus missile because it doesn't want to have to send troops there. Now, whether or not Germany actually has troops there is a separate matter. And that was right after Macron made that crazy claim. And he came out, the ignoramus that he is, and said NATO countries have been discussing intervention for a long time, but no consensus has been reached, despite denials from everybody. So there's no question that there are some direct Western casualties here, not just mercenaries. But there was an anonymous, which is sometimes meaningless, EU defense official who said this. He said, everyone knows that there are Western special forces in Ukraine. They've just not acknowledged it officially. Of course, initially, that was all called Russian conspiracy theories. But of course, like all of those, every syllable of it turned out to be true. Every prediction made by the left turned out to be completely false. Sometimes I forget just how the Russia is losing trope, just how widespread it was, and just completely making up scenarios, because journalists don't know, and everything has to be censored from both Kiev and the U.S., even though they're one and the same thing. And nothing like this, I mean, this goes beyond South Vietnam, this goes beyond South Korea. But there's no plausible deniability at this point anymore. And Scholz actually came very close to this coming out and saying. But this is what Putin said on the 24th last month about anyone who wants to continue doing that sort of thing. And he says, no matter who tries to stand in our way, or all the more so create threats for our country and people, they must know that Russia will respond immediately and the consequences will be such as you have never seen in your entire history. No matter how the events unfold, we are ready. All the necessary decisions in this regard have already been taken, and I hope my words will be heard. And I doubt that he is holding his breath. But now that it's public knowledge, things have changed. Any kind of miscalculation, I mean, if there are soldiers there, they're automatically targets. Actually, any military target is Europe, is according to the rules of engagement, is open to attack, because they're all combatants. They don't have to be directly in the field. And you have servicemen who are quote-unquote on leave, or some who volunteer to go there. So in one way or another, they get around. And I've known this, you've known this, the Kremlin knows this. But they've been very, very careful about this. France's mercenaries have been hit. Ukraine, no question about it. And Russia denies, of course, Western troops being killed, but we all know that it's true. Because these very same anonymous quotes strongly confirm it. At a minimum, their identities were not part of the media. And Moscow never confirmed or denied the fact, but again, everyone knows. This is a hot war. It may be undeclared, but there's been no direct retaliation since they use Kiev for this. And they are, the West, of course, is utterly not prepared for an escalation of this war economically, militarily, financially, because most of Europe has forces that are too small, completely inexperienced with female defense ministers, because they figure the Americans are going to do everything. So this is what most call the security dilemma, in the sense that NATO has to engage in this balancing act. But large-scale conventional intervention is, at least right now, very unlikely. But Russia has not hit NATO offices, despite the fact that they would have a right to do so. So the admission from both the Germans and the French, it may be a controlled leak, but either way, it proves everything that I've been saying from the very beginning. And of course, the question is, especially when Victoria Nuland has now resigned to go take a multi-million-dollar position somewhere, despite her being an ignoramus, now things at the front have collapsed. In fact, Carsten Riess, who I quote all the time, who sometimes I even rely on, that there's nothing left. Now, I said this ages ago. It's the endless weapons. It's Russia's care. We talked about the security trilemma or the counterinsurgency trilemma. The fact that this war is being waged in entirely Russian areas forces the Russian army to be very circumspect. Even the New York Times claims that Ukraine really has nothing. They're running out of everything that you need to put an army in the field. But you have to be an idiot not to have realized 10 years ago, let alone now, that the Russians have better training. And importantly, they have a state-owned, extremely large military production complex. Now, when I say running out of everything, I'm talking about, among other things, manpower. They've been desperately short of fuel for a long time. They have no trained crews for a lot of the more sophisticated weapons. But right now, Ukraine has two assault brigades, that is, offensive brigades. A brigade is kind of a new unit. It's smaller than a division, but larger than the old regiment. And these are irregular forces, the Azovs, the 3rd and the 5th. Irregular forces, of course, can't be counted on, because they're fighting a regular army. The 3rd is now largely gone. to the loss of Zika, which is significant only because it's been a center for Ukrainian offense and defense for at least 10 years. So they have one left. The training of this kind of high-quality brigade takes years. And combat experience, believe it or not, is in short supply. So whatever's left have been annihilated. There aren't physically enough fit men to build anything else. Their leadership, green as they were, are long gone. And Russia has relied on air bombing because Russia has always had air superiority. So this is all being done without any air cover whatsoever. The precision bombs, the 1,500 pounders, even the hard shells in Ukraine's defensive positions are long gone. And that explains how Avdiivka could have fallen as quickly as it did. It's been fortified for a decade now. Morale is zero, equipment is zero, fuel is zero, and the government in Kiev has about a 0% approval rate. Everything from manpower, leadership, to materiel, logistics, morale, there's nothing left. Now, what Russia does here and what the West does in response is a separate issue. NATO can't prevent any of this from happening. I mean, the UK army is incapable of putting up much of a fight. It's the smallest army in 300 years, the smallest in British history. Germany and France have not made huge investments in their production complex. Denmark is now hopeless because they've given away their entire artillery stock, despite the fact that these things are usually destroyed the minute they get sent to the field, and you don't have a whole lot of trained crews who know how to work them, and certainly not in combat conditions. It's not just a matter of Ukraine having nothing, but the West has been completely depleted. This was not the case in Korea or Vietnam. It only happens against a place like Russia. NATO is under great strain. How long will it be before the U.S. abandons the European Union? And of course, as I've been saying for years, you find it in my book, The Foreign Policy of Man's Society, the U.S., for many reasons, is a paper tiger. And there is nothing anyone can do about that. Now, the other article I want to quote is from a guy named Jack Rasmus from just a few days ago. And this is part of the problem of not being a specialist in this area. He's written stuff on Wall Street, he's written stuff on central banking. This isn't exactly his area, but his heart is in the right place. And he's still saying things that would be scandalous to your average New York Times employee. The second offensive, of course, as he correctly notes, really never got off the ground. I mean, he says it failed. I don't think it ever happened. They waited 9 months to launch in the summer of last year because they simply didn't have the men. There was no delay. They just couldn't do it. You can't do any of this without armor or air support, which is long gone there. And they're being reduced and rationed as far as ammunition and supplies are concerned. You have an 800-mile front, given the size of Ukraine. And Russia's position is that Russian-speaking areas, and I think all of them, should become part of Russia, which is hardly an unreasonable experience. But even if you're 100% Ukrainian-speaking, who the hell wants to be a part of the Kiev regime? It's a one-party state with a state-controlled media. He does point out, humorously, that Zelensky repeatedly said in public where these offensives were going to go. And he also notes an obvious thing. He says a lot of very obvious things here. Clausewitz, we take it for granted that you have to have at least a minimum of 3-1 numeric advantage in offense as you do in defense. And maybe even more than that, especially in urban areas. And of course, then he mentions the Surovkin line. Three lines deep, which is pretty standard. Russians, you know, the Ukrainian could never take this back. I don't care how many mercenaries they use, because these defensive positions are hardened. Mines, anti-tank gun emplacements, hard shells for sophisticated weapons, artillery, and roughly 400,000 Russian troops. Let's be clear that in my estimation, Russia is at most utilizing about 15%, between 10 and 15% of its military power here, because it has to have substantial forces everywhere. And that's a lot of everywhere. He says that Ukraine has failed to concentrate sufficient forces in Zaporozhye, but that's because they don't exist. They don't have large forces to go anywhere. So last year, as I said 100 times, the outcome was already, you know, very predictable. It was a huge defeat and an admission of total, they're completely denuded of what an army might need. You're talking about 100,000 losses just in that summer offensive. Now he claims that 250,000 have been killed overall, which is ridiculous. It's closer to 600,000. And if you go back to my casualty talks a few months ago, I get into detail how I know that. They didn't really do anything. The second offensive was almost, because everything is going through Washington, the American embassy in Kiev. Of course, they lost huge in Bakhmut. And they're being defeated again by the Donetsk militias, which are now essentially regular forces. Ukraine is being depopulated. Of course, the so-called second offensive, all of a sudden, you know, these journalists who don't know the first thing about Ukraine or what an offensive is, or what a military requires, it was a media soundbite. It's never been a reality. The West doesn't have the forces to take something like the Shirovkin line. Russia knows Ukraine intimately. So, around Christmas time of last year, you know, the end of December 2023, Zelensky said that he is going to draft, in other words, force into service 500,000 this year. He does note that students and women were going to be sent to the front, but that's not going anywhere. Allegedly, the claim is that the 5 million Ukrainian men who fled abroad will be forced to return, and they will be sent to the front, which is a plan without a plan. NATO is not about to dispatch special forces to round up Ukrainians abroad. And it wouldn't matter anyway, because there's a reason that they left the country. A huge portion of the Ukrainian armed forces have fled. Desertion is an epidemic. And you don't blame them, of course. You have huge numbers of Russian forces, which we all know should have been done in the beginning, but Monday morning quarterbacking is too easy. He does say that the Ukrainian forces estimated at 350,000, which is utterly untrue, since the resources do not exist there to even staff such a force. Its best units are long gone, but their numbers are propaganda. I have sources that say that their regular forces are under 50,000 with zero morale. Russians are so confident that they're traveling outside of their turrets, no matter where they are. They're taking POWs and they're taking AWOL Ukrainians by the ton and making it easy for them, as well as Ukrainian-speaking civilians, to become Russian citizens. It's not just that Ukraine is a fourth-world country without the capacity to wage war. As of right now, that's absolutely true. Talking about F-16s is nonsensical, since there are no pilots. NATO can't provide anything. They couldn't beat Russia and Ukraine. This is their backyard on very friendly territory for the Russians. America's military-industrial complex is spread all over the world. And yet the Jewish moron who runs Ukraine says he needs 1 million shells a year, despite the fact that he doesn't know anything about what the military needs. My personal opinion is that the oligarchs around Zelensky are selling a lot of this equipment for hard cash. Now, while the West invented stories about Russia needing equipment from North Korea, which is laughable, that's, of course, projection, since the U.S. had to go to South Korea and Japan to replenish some of their stocks. And now, of course, they're completely vulnerable there. Russia can produce as many shells, missiles as they need. It has a sprawling, enormous, state-owned military production complex. Now, despite the fact that the American military has been purged multiple times, he does note that there is some opposition within the military, the American military, opposition to the continual sending of sophisticated weapons, long-range anything to Ukraine, since they don't know how to use it. They're extremely expensive. The U.S. is running out, and they're just going to be destroyed the minute they get there. There's a handful of the famous Abrams tanks. Every one has been destroyed. If they have the crews, they're green and probably very young. Ukraine doesn't have pilots or fuel, so an F-16 is purely symbolic, and I believe they'll be sold. He notes that there's been 7 Patriot anti-missile defense units. All have been destroyed. He says 5, they're all of them, and they don't have the manpower or the skill to man them. He does correctly note that these systems cost billions of dollars each, takes a long time to produce, and sending this to Ukraine just to be destroyed immediately is not sitting well. Yet the reason that the Pentagon has never been audited, because all of this would reflect there. And now that Gaza has taken over the West's mind, although both are Jewish wars, since the Ukrainian ruling class, so-called, is almost entirely Jewish, and obviously Israel is, and the press that triangulates. If Israel needs it, to hell with the Ukrainian gambit. American funding for Ukraine, which these are all loans. The U.S. doesn't have this capacity. And as I've said since the late 90s, Ukraine is utterly dependent on American and European money, products, weaponry. They don't have their own industrial complex. They don't have their own industry, because what they had was concentrated in one particular area. And now you have this mishmash of older Soviet weapons that were sent from, you know, the former East Germany, places like that, as well as more sophisticated NATO-furnished weapons. So you don't even have a standardized chain of command. You don't have a standardized system of weaponry. The war was lost, as I said 100 times, in March of 2022, when their air force was wiped out on the ground. But he makes an interesting point. He says, you know, here was the agenda. And I like how succinctly he puts it. He says, okay, here's the plan. U.S. and NATO were going to arm Ukraine to the teeth. That's true. But what he doesn't say is to plan an invasion of Donetsk. Then, of course, the imposition of sanctions, which, because they're ignoramuses, thought it would undermine its economy, having no idea how the Russian economy functions, reduce its ability to sell oil, despite the fact that petroleum makes up about 8 to 9% of the GDP. GNP is a different story, that it can't fund the economy, and that, at a minimum, the media will cover for anything else and talk about Putin's defeat and ultimately lead to Putin's overthrow. Now, I first heard this before 2014, but it went into overdrive in 2014. All of this stuff was in place prior to the war, which is why there is a war. Back in 2014, the Eastern militias, the Donetsk and Luhansk, defeated the Ukrainian army, and that's why it had to be completely remade. But that remaking is long gone. Of course, Putin's popularity is between 80 and 90%. Prior to the war, it was around 75% everywhere. Now, Kiev, corruption is the norm, as you would have in a one-party state that's Judaic, very much anti-Ukrainian. because, you know, the war with the Cossacks and you know, this goes back, speaking of Zaporozhye, the point was to destroy both countries. You know, Kiev at one point wanted to make peace, but the British stopped that. I'm not sure why there would be a coup, since these generals are pretty much unknown, have no charisma, and have no loyalty of their men. At most, they may do it just for the sake of getting Ukraine out of the war. Now, he makes an error when he says his ability to continue martial law runs out in a couple months, after which elections are likely. Elections are not likely. He's already stated he's not going to engage them. And by some miracle, if they do, it's going to be a theatrical production. You have a totally controlled media and essentially one party. He will never expose himself to an election. Now, he does say this, and this is my problem. He says, in this increasingly bleak scenario for NATO and the Biden administration, U.S. and NATO strategy is now shifting. The new strategy is not formally finalized, but appears to be moving forward with the following elements. Ukraine militarily must shift to a defensive strategy with a new line somewhere east of the Dnieper, in the Donbass, and Zaporozhye, and Kharkiv in the south. Which is, of course, I'm saying, you know, that's impossible. It doesn't have the hardware, doesn't have the fuel. You need air power for this. You need morale for this, and you need trained men for this. So that can't happen. Despite all this, somehow it's going to rebuild its military forces, which, with no money. He assumes that NATO is going to provide new advanced weaponry, even though he said there's some opposition to it. But, of course, they will not. They cannot. And ultimately, these weapons are symbolic, and I believe they will be sold. Now, the U.S. elections in November, of course, are going to be rigged. And he seems to think that, and well, he does, keep in mind that Donald Trump has the exact same point of view as this idiot, Weekend at Bernie's, has. Ukraine is in no position to have an industrial economy, let alone rebuild a military force. Russia has won this. Now, this is not a prediction, it's a personal opinion that the U.S. will do what it did in Afghanistan. It was soundly defeated there in an attrition war, which the U.S. cannot wage and cannot win. They'll change the goalposts as to what victory means. They'll claim victory. The media will parrot it completely. And they'll draw down. Putin, of course, has always been open to peace. Again, it's reasonable that all Russian-speaking areas of the East should become a part of Russia. No one living in Ukraine wants to be a part of Ukraine, except for a handful of urban Jews. Kharkiv, anything really east of the river, what we used to call Left Bank Ukraine. And any referendum that might be held there are going to give massive majorities in favor of leaving this fourth world sinking ship. Like the United States, Ukraine is not an industrialized economy. However, literacy is very high. Its best men have long since fled. The brain drain is worse than South Africa. And as far as things like concentration of forces, these are all basically common sense things. Who runs out of reserves first? Who has better supply lines? Who could use deception better? Better training and morale? I don't need people like Clausewitz to tell me this. These are, you know, Captain Obvious kind of statements. I mentioned at the beginning that Victoria Nuland has resigned. And in the article by Rachel Marsden, which actually came out today, I know I've cited her before. The name sounds very familiar. Kind of makes fun of her. Again, if you've heard her speak, she strings cliches together. But she said something in her Karen-like way that she wasn't supposed to say. Any aid going to Ukraine is not helping anybody. Clearly, $75 billion the U.S. has sent isn't doing anything. In fact, the full $178 billion isn't doing anything. And there's this vague victory that's always being redefined. In fact, they don't have a definition at all. And the line, as long as it takes, again, that was not said in Vietnam, Korea, or anywhere else during the Cold War. That's only said against Eurasian states. as long as it takes for what to happen. But she goes on CNN. She starts off with her cliches, as Martin states, we're spreading democracy around the world, etc. And then she says, by the way, actually she says, by the way, we have to remember that the bulk of this money is going right back into the U.S. to make those weapons. And I'm not so sure she wanted to say that. I think the normies think that Ukraine is just kind of a normal economy. Yeah, everything they believe is wrong, Russia being the opposite, but merely because it has high literacy and is Europe doesn't mean it's industrial. The U.S. is an industrial line. It's just endless war. The global war on terror has drawn down to a great extent, but the U.S. will still use proxies. The realities on the ground, however, have obviously favored Russia from day one. But Russia had to invade simply because there was a mass of Ukrainian troops and mercenaries on the border of the Eastern Republics. Now, you have all of these security guarantees, she notes. You know, France, Germany, Canada, Italy. Clearly, they're being forced to do this. Denmark, again. And the Ukrainian line has been the same for 20 years. The foreign minister, Kuliba, told the European Union that now Russia is now closer to your house. That was after the Avdiivka defeat. And as I've said before, Russia is not understood in Washington. It is constructed in Washington. It exists to justify the military-industrial complex whose stock is through the roof. But again, their systems are all over the world. In fact, there's even a whatever it's called, the European Peace Facility, to reimburse EU countries for unloading all of these weapons, despite the fact that there's simply no money there. And she correctly states that these are being destroyed before anyone is even trained to use them. And this is why Nuland's comments were so significant. But she said something else that Martin brings up. Talking about Putin, she said, this isn't the Russia we wanted. Like the Karen that she is, she says, we wanted a partner that was going to be westernizing, that was going to be European. But that is not what Putin has done. And she said this, again, on CNN. Now, what does she mean by that? I'm not sure what the normies think she means. But it means liberal, feminist, pro-abortion, taking massive numbers of migrants, even though that is actually happening, to sell off its state assets, to allow Western banks to colonize, especially the central bank, and have the country completely dependent on Western forms of consumer capital. That's what they mean. Of course, sanctions have done nothing but improve the Russian economy. It was self-sufficient pretty much to begin with, but now even more so. They're deliberately destroying Europe, Newland's friends, by, you know, these sanctions. Germany's becoming deindustrialized. Much of Northern Europe is becoming deindustrialized and under threat because any of these countries are legitimate targets since they are, in fact, combatants. But Nuland's statements prove what I've been saying, not just since the war, but for 20 years. The regime has economic and, to a lesser extent, religious and ethnic, that is to say, Jewish reasons for destroying the resurrection of Russia. So that's it for this week. Thank you, everyone, again for listening. I'll talk to you in 7 days. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.